We have begun it Sunday in the introduction for chapter 13. We come in and see where the dragon is on the sands of the sea, and a beast comes up out of the sea, and the beast is described as a leopard, the feet of a bear, and a mouth like a lion. And the dragon had given, or the Satan had given, his power, his throne, and great authority. And we went back and looked at Daniel, the seventh chapter, which gave us a lot of information that would help us understand what this was. In the seventh chapter, Daniel's vision, he has four beasts he sees. One of them is the leopard, one of them is the bear, and the other one's the lion. And the fourth beast was something ferocious, which it entailed that this was a kingdom. And this is what we're saying here. This beast here that comes up out of the sea is the Roman Empire. And in verse 3, you would talk about where one has been mortally wounded. Nero was the first one of the Caesars or emperors of Rome that start persecuting the Christians. And the mainly reason he did that is, you know, Nero supposedly started the fire, and so he blamed the Christians for the fire here in Rome. And so the persecution was mainly in Rome with Nero. It didn't really branch out too much to the rest of the kingdom or the province, because he didn't really make an edict or law against them. He just said that the Christian was, and the people just kind of turned on the Christians then. However, when Nero died, we saw that that was where he was morally wounded, but he saw that another one came up that seemed to be like Nero, except he was a lot more cruel, and his persecution did cover throughout the Roman Empire, and that's Domitian. And so in verse 4, so that they worshiped the dragon, because basically the dragon, Satan, had given the power. The emperor had, you know, how the empire goes depends a lot of times how the leaders go. And since the leader was corrupt and evil, and so he was deceived by Satan, and he thought that he was so much better. And matter of fact, that he thought he put himself as a god. He thought he was on an equal plane with God. And so that's where we kind of left off Sunday. Anybody else have any questions or comments they want to make before we begin with verse 5?
Sound like they'd be good politicians
today. Well, you kind of look at it, see how it is. We will. We don't really understand the full persecution that they're going through, but we can begin to see how now Christians are being persecuted, in particular in our country. And it's been known for worldwide that there's other countries that, you know, persecute the Christians that way. But we can see where, since you're taking God out of everything, you know, they didn't want to even mention God or talk about God, and everything's pushed back, and so everything's gone to the humans. And so you can see how our country is going the way it is. And that's the reason why that Rome was this way, too. Because of the emperor elevating himself to the deity. All right, in verse 5, let's read verses 5 through 8. And he was given a mouth speaking great things, and this is talking about the sea beast, and blasphemed, and he was given authority to continue 42 months. We've seen the 42 months, 1,260, 3.5 years, a number of times. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. All right, talking about he was giving them out. And basically he's talking about here is that he uses his mouth, or he uses his things speaking against God and trying to elevate himself up. Well, what is he going to do? Well, God's going to be brought down. If you're going to, if you know how that rules, if you want to make myself great against somebody else, well, I'll tell you how bad this other person is and how good I am. And so he is blaspheming God. He's taking slander against God. And he was given authority to continue this in this 42 months or this period of time set aside or determined by God. And so, in words, God is allowing this to happen. And we'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. But he is given authority to this, or God is laughing to him, or he's basically the authority, as we see, is coming from Satan. And Satan's using the emperor to deceive not only himself, but the whole empire, the country itself. And continuing on, it says, then he opened his mouth in blaspheme against God. He's just telling again what he's been doing. He's slandering God. But not only is he blaspheming or talking about God, he's blaspheming his name, his tabernacle, or in this state would be the church, and those who dwell in heaven. And so he is against not only God, but his church and his children. Now, the children could be those that are already have been martyred or died and they've gone to heaven. But it also, it could be twofold. It's talking about those that are living on earth that he is talking against, and that's how he's using it and bringing the people of the empire of the world thing over against them. You have to understand that. We'll talk about it again. The Roman Empire is very vast. It's very huge. And this particular time, it is the greatest kingdom there ever was, and he's using his power and his authority as this kingdom here to downbring or to crush God. And this is what Satan's purpose is try to. Well, we already talked about now. He know he can't be God and he can't be Christ. So the only thing he's got to go after is God's children. And so that's what he's here for. He's using this empire now is to turn against the church and against God's children, the saints. And that's why he's blaspheming them or slandering them to get the rest of the kingdom against them. It's not only the king or the emperor or the Caesar himself, but he has turned the whole nation against Christians. And it started, I said, in like the 60s. A.D. with Nero, and we're probably about in the 90 A.D.s now with Domitian, and the way that it describes, I think we are in this particular time with the mention of the Roman Empire. Now, in continuing, verse 7 says, it was granted to him to make war with the saints to overcome them, and authority was given to him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. Well, here's the thing: it was granted to him. It was God allowed him to do this, and it seems at this particular time now, it says to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Now, as we had talked about beforehand, at this particular time, it looks like the devil's winning. It looks like Caesar's winning. It looks like the Christians are losing. But he's telling them, he says, now, just hold on. We've already been through this, but he's going through again and tell them, particularly these ones in this particular time, because they're having a really tough time of persecution, not only with their life, but also economic, we'll talk about later on. But it's just a hard, hard life for a Christian at this particular time with it. And he's telling them, basically, he says, look, He has this. And it looks like it, from the world standpoint of the Roman Empire, it looks like, you know, there's nothing that can beat Caesar or the Roman Empire. And it seems like, you know, that whatever he wants, he gets. And the Christians are losing the battle. And it's tough. It's very tough on them. Charles?
You know, overcoming is one of the major themes, I think, in the book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. We've seen that even in the turn off of the seven letters to the churches. So we shouldn't be surprised when we have to do that. Because it's newer things doing life or doing this world that we have to overcome. And it takes a strong faith to do that.
That's right. And he's telling us that now authority was given over here on every tribe, tongue, and nation. And I can tell you, the Roman Empire is a vast, vast empire. Let me just tell you. So he's all basically of the earth dwellers or something like that. He has been given the authority or the rule over them. And he does have it. Caesar does have it. And of course, Caesar knows this too with it. And you have to understand, not only is Satan have deceived the emperor and things like this, but you have to look at, too, all the deception that's going on. How that he can deceive the co-empire, the whole kingdom. Well, you look at our government sometimes today, how we are deceived. We think we're doing something else, and we find out we're not doing that. You find a lot of things going on that you don't even know what's going on. Well, this is what's happening here. And particularly, you know, you look in the case of Rome, like I said before, Nero was just mainly talking about Rome, but now Domitian, he's after the Christians throughout the whole empire, as we'll see a little bit later on. And then in verse 8, it says, all who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. All right, he says that all who dwell on the earth will worship him. Okay, now that just sounds like everybody. Well, now he describes, though, who the all is. All is not inclusive of all. All is those whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb. In other words, if you're not God's children, then you're worshiping Caesar, the beast. They're vastly, you classify them as the same thing. Those that are not children of God, they're all worshiping. Well, why are they worshiping him now? If you have that much power and that control, and the people sees this, and they look at it and says, who can make war against Rome? It is the most powerful empire there is. Who can stand against it? And so you can look at it and see why the people are in awe of that. That, and if you're seeing him, how he persecutes the Christians, how they're suffering, then you don't want to go through that. If you're in the world, look, you just tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it. Because I don't want to lose my life over this, and I don't want to lose my job or anything like that. Charles?
See, that's a big-time problem when the government or the country that you're in passes laws that is contrary to God's law in requires you to adhere to it. And we've seen just like that. We've seen like man and man marriage or women and women marriage. That's something I thought we never would see in our lifetime, but it's just come about in the last few months or years, you know. And our government said required us to do that. You have to do that. We've got big time problems. God said, no, you don't either. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me continue on just a second here, talking about continuing on. This is God's plan. Okay? Let me understand. This is what he's telling them. Before the foundation of this earth, before this earth was created, this was in God's mind. This is what he has planned. And this is not a haphazard plan. Something just didn't come up and say, well, here, Rome come. Well, I didn't know Rome's going to come up just like this and be this powerful. What am I going? No. God's telling them now, look, I knew about this before I even created the earth. This is how the plan was going to be. Now, you want to know who's in control? I know it doesn't look good. But let me tell you, I knew it was coming. And that's what I'm telling you right now. This is written is before or about the time of the persecution, but now the persecution is going to continue on for another 100 or 200 years. And he's telling them now this is what's going to be coming about. And he's encouraging them to say, now you just keep the faith. He's already talked about, you know, in the time, and we've looked in the first 11 chapters. And he described those that were murdered or martyred or persecuted to the death that they have their white robes now. They are taken care of. They are lacking nothing. Nothing. Now, it may be seem like you're going to be suffering for a few years. It may be your lifetime. You may have to die. But you keep the faith. What you receive is going to be so great that really words cannot describe it. And we're trying to use the best words we can, and you can't picture how great it's going to be. But you think about where God lives, how awesome, great that's going to be, and you can be there. And he just tells them that now, I've had this plan from the very beginning. This just didn't, Rome just didn't come up all of a sudden like this. Daniel told you that Rome was going to come. Matter of fact, I told you all four nations, kingdoms that was going to come before Rome. Or three, I should say. Rome's the fourth one. So now who is in control? I know it doesn't look like it. It looks like Rome is in control. It looks like emperor. Let me just tell you. I've already told you what was coming, and it's here now. Now, if you can't believe that, and that's why he's telling you, put your patience and faith in me, and you will survive. Sherry? Remember when we talked about Sunday, basically talking about and when we were reading about Daniel, about the kingdom here, and that the kingdom of God was going to come in during this period of time, the Roman Empire, and that kingdom was going to last forever and ever and ever. And like we said about Roman Empire, nothing. Babylonian, nothing. All these are great ones are gone. But the church is still here. The kingdom is still here. And it will always be here until Christ comes.
That's a good point. They're always. church will not be annihilated. It might not be like we recognize it, but God's word and God's people will always be here.
It's going to be here until God, you know, says it ceases. But it says forever and ever and ever. You know, there's a time, though, when this earth is going to be burned up. Judgment Day is going to come with it. But the emphasis is upon right now, with to me in Revelation, is victory and comfort. And these people need it. And we may need it, too. Who knows? All right, let's go ahead and continue. And he says in verse 9, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. All right, we haven't seen that since the when he was using this phrase when he was talking to the churches. And basically he's telling them, he says, what I have just said and what I'm about to hear or reveal to you, you pay attention to it. And he goes on in verse 10, he says, he who leads into captivity goes into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. All right. How shall the saints react to this power and opposition? And he says, they were not to resist the civil power. The civil power was ordained by God with it. But you have to understand who going to be the judge. You and I won't be, but God's going to judge them. And he's telling them, if they're going to be led in captivity, they're going to be in captivity. If they're killed by the sword, they're going to be killed by the sword. What did he tell the people down under the altar? He says, no, when are you going to bring justice for our death here and our martyrdom? He said, tell them with just patience. And that's why he's telling these people here. It will come. You know I know it's coming because Rome's no longer here. Judgment came against them. But he says now, you be steadfast, patient, and you keep the faith. And I will take care of Rome. It will come in my time. That's the reason he uses these terms all the time before. It's God's time, not yours and my time, but his predetermined time that he has set for it. And there's a time for it. And he will take care of it. He will revenge those that are going to die. Those that have died and those that are going to die. Those that have been persecuted. Those that are going to lose everything. He will take vengeance. Charles?
Our faith has to influence the world instead of the world influencing our faith. That's God's purpose. That's God's plan. And that's the way it will be. If we don't do it, there'll be some that will do it.
All right. Okay. Let's change here. It's a little smaller, but it looks like I guess you can read it pretty well. Verse 11 to verse 17. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He calls us all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. And that no man may buy or sell except one who has the mark of the name of the beast or the number of his name. All right. Now, we've got a second beast coming up. This one's from the earth. Okay? So this one is still, as we will see and talk about here, this is still under the power of the dragon or Satan. And he's talking about this one a little bit different. It says a lamb with two horns. That way. You know, a doctrinal lamb, like a beast, a lamb. But when he spoke like a dragon. In other words, he may look innocent, has that religious thing, because lambs were, a lot of times we're told, look as a symbol for religion. He may have that, but when he speaks, you see his true character. And that's what this is. And he's talking about the two horns, which I think basically he's talking about. He's got power, but he's limited in his power. The second beast. But this second beast and this first beast are correlated. They go hand in hand. They go together. Now, and he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and all those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. Okay? His job, the second beast, is to enforce the worship of the first beast. Now, who is this second beast? Well, I use the word committee, and I'll just tell you the reason why in just a second. But it's used, there's other terms that they use this way. False prophet is one of people use this. Some of them use it as when your mind goes blank, it went blank. It's out there someplace, guys. All right. But I call it basically a committee. But basically what it is, what I think he's talking about here, it is to bring people to the worship. This is, how do you worship the Caesar if you're not in Rome? And Rome, like I said, is just a small part. It covers a vast territory. So this is what the second beast was, the false prophet, or the, what I call it. It's the priests or the prophets that are used in worship of the beast. The beast has to have, if to be worshipped in other places, has to have a temple, an image, and an idol. An image of the, and here it talks about the image of the one of the daily moon, which I think particularly is talking about Domitian. And so you've got his image throughout the providence, or out throughout the empire, and he has these priests and these prophets or things using these deceptions ideas, which we're going to talk about here in a moment. And this is what he's trying to do, is get, that's really, it works so hand in hand with the first beast. The emperor, the kingdom here, the Caesar. And these are the ones that say, look, Caesar says, I want you to worship me. Okay? I'm a god. And so he puts it in play, and that's the second beast. These are the false prophet, or the priest, or whatever you want to call it. And I just call it committee because I think it's a combination of different people. It's not one thing. But it's all those that in the temple that entice to tell that doing the deception. And we talk about here in verse 13, he says, he performed great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Now, God used signs and miracles to confirm his word, to show his word, that the people that are the person that's speaking his words is truly his disciple. That these words are coming from God himself. Well, how do you think they're going to do this? They're going to use signs too. But they're not going to be the true signs. They're not going to be true miracles then. Because he's talking about it like here in verse 14. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs. These are all deceptions. It may look like that, but let me just tell you, it's a magic. It's a trick. And the devil's behind it, and he's deceiving you to worship this Caesar. Because if you worship this Caesar, then you're not worshiping God. And you're worshiping Satan. So this is the devil, Satan, this is the reason the dragon's behind all this, to get you away from God. And this is also to try him entice you if you we make you worship him. Then we'll get some of God's children too. We make it tough enough. But he's got the people now of the empire, the earth dwellers. They are been deceived by these signs that they think that this emperor here can do all this thing. All these priests or whatever, the prophets there that he has throughout the kingdom there. And they look at him and says, yeah, look what he can do. But it just tricks. Magic. Any comments on that before we begin?
Satan still is the number one tool, I think. He's still using these empires to come up, and we've seen some of them go, but these false prophets, they're still here. We're going to deal with them again down in the latter part, 16th and 17th chapter of Revelation. But we deal with them by that. Matter of fact, I met one Tuesday, face to face. And they're still out there, and they're still doing a lot of harm.
Well, if you look at any denomination, what do you think that is? It's to deceive you, the tool of the devil, to get you away from worshiping the true God. Hey, the devil is slick, guys. And he's got these people right in his hands. And he's using them as best as he can. And he's got them following the emperor. So if they're following, the emperor says, look, I am God. So he's got you away from God. He's already got you deceived. Now the second thing he's going to do, he's going to turn those people against God's children. That's what he's going to do. Then in verse 15, he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, and that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would but not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Now here's the strong one right off the bat. If you're not going to worship these temples here, these idol things out in the empire, of the Roman Empire, here's a good thing. If you don't do it, you're going to die. Now, you don't think that's not going to entice a lot of people to worship? Let me tell you. Death, life. Worship image, I get life. If I rebel, death. Oh, I worship that idol of the emperor. Even more than happy to. Life. Let me tell you how the power is. Verse 16. He calls us all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. Now, who did he leave out? That's everybody. All that from the very highest to the very lowest, they all been deceived. Now, on the right hand, or the marking on the right hand and on the foreheads. My personal view on this marking thing is just like God marks his children, the devil marks his too. Now, if you go in and look in the history thing, it's kind of hard to see this. But in some ways, there were some markings. Or there's some way that they knew that you worshipped the idol. Some way you worshipped the emperor. Where they gave you a certificate, or they gave you a stone, or they gave you a coin or something with the deity on there, what? There were some cases. And I know in four ways in Britain, there was the coins that they had. But it's not very clear. But I don't know if he's talking basically about that. I don't It may be that there was some marking on the right hands. In certain areas, there were certain parts they think there was markings upon the person himself. But most of them think that they were given either some type of certificate, which is or a stone or something with that, or a coin, or some image like that, that show that you have fulfilled your obligation. And then in verse 17, it says, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number on his hand. Now, last few minutes. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. For is his number of man, his number 666. Anybody want to explain that? Anybody know what that 666 is? Remember, this is the number of the beast. And who's the beast? Huh? The beast is the Roman Empire. This is a number. Well, how do you get 666? How are you going to calculate that? I tell you, you don't have to use your fingers, I don't think. I don't think you have to try to do some things like a lot of people. There's a lot of information out there in that 666. Here's my short view of it. We've been talking about numbers. Symbolizing. Okay? We use that. They're not a true number thing. I say, throughout the book, seven expresses the idea of perfection or completeness. The seven churches, the seven horns, seven eyes, seven spirits, and so forth. Seven. So six, now, which fall below the sacred seven, can never be seven or reach perfection. Therefore, it symbolizes the imperfect, that which is human and destined to fail. It is said that the Jews, the number six was an omen or symbol of dread, of doom. So when it is triple, 666, it represents the completeness of doom and failure. In other words, six can never be a seven. Can never ever be complete. Can never be whole. And that's the reason to talk about it is doom. It's doom for failure. And that's what I think he ends up with here, is telling us that the Roman Empire, the beast, is doomed. And you just mark it down. This is from the Lord. Thank you.